The encouragement from everyone to those four men, really those seven men, and appreciate so much this congregation. This has been a blessing for Misty and I and our family to be here with you. I think we're going on 4.5 years, so y'all have put up with me for quite a while, so that's to your credit. So I certainly very thankful for all of you and am excited about where we're going in the future. I agree with Chad, who said our best days are ahead of us. So we look forward to working together, proceeding in the kingdom, and helping each other get to heaven. Well, Joseph has been on a roller coaster basically his life, starting certainly at age 17. When he was the favorite son, even though he was the 11th to be born in that household, yet he was the automatic favorite because he was the son of the favorite wife, and he had a coat to prove it. And his brothers didn't like that coat or Joseph, and so they sold him into slavery when they had the opportunity. And he went to Potiphar's house, so that'd be a low point, and then he was God was with him, very prosperous there, and Mr. Potiphar said, "You're in control of everything in this house," and that was going well until Mrs. Potiphar kind of stepped in and lied about Joseph committing a sin, and which got Joseph in prison. So then Joseph was in prison for quite a while, and then the chief baker and the cupbearer came in to prison with him. And one day, they had some really bad dreams, and Joseph saw they were very sad, very distressed, depressed, some versions say. And said, "Well, what's going on? Why are you so sad?" And they said, "Well, we've had these terrible dreams." And the cupbearer proceeded to tell Joseph his dreams. "Well, don't interpretations belong to God? So tell me the dreams." And so he said, "Well, your dreams mean in 3 days you are going to rise to be the cupbearer again. You'll be at Pharaoh's hand." And the baker said, "That worked out good for him. What about me?" He said, "Well, 3 days your head will rise without your body. So that's not going to fare as well for you." So then remember what Joseph said to the cupbearer. "When you are back in your old position, remember me." Which the cupbearer did not do, and 2 years have passed since that incident. But tonight we're going to look at chapter 41, where Joseph, he calls prison the pits. Remember that in last chapter 39, or 40, excuse me. So he goes from the pits to second in command, to second in power. So we're going to look at that story tonight. It's a pretty long chapter, so I'm just going to have you kind of read it. I always want you to make sure that I am speaking the truth. Don't take my word for what the story said. I want you to read along as I kind of summarize for it, just for the sake of time. So in verses 1 through 8, we see God giving Pharaoh a couple of dreams. And so Pharaoh goes to sleep one night, and he dreams that he is kind of by the Nile River, the prominent river in Egypt, and he sees these big, plump, nice-looking cows there by the river, and then some seven ugly, skinny cows eat up these big, fat cows, and they don't get any fatter. We'll see that in a little bit. And so he just wakes up. If you have a dream like that, you could probably understand. Well, he kind of woke up and just, what in the world was that? Able to kind of calm himself down again. And he has another dream that was very similar to it. And seven ears of grain from one stalk grow up to be plump and good, and then another stalk produces seven more grains, ugly, thin, and they eat up the plump, the seven good ones. So Pharaoh is very troubled because it's important to notice that Pharaoh understands these dreams mean something. and I need to figure out what you mean. So you're the wisest people in the world at that time, especially the wisest in Egypt. So he goes to his magicians or the wise men in Egypt, and they say, this is what my dreams were. Can you figure it out, what it means? And they are unable to do so. Now, if you're Pharaoh, how are you feeling at this moment? You are feeling extremely anxious, right? Because you've had two dreams. You have no clue what they mean. And neither do the wisest people in the land. So it's as though you're sunk. There's no hope for you to ever figure out what those dreams mean. So he's in a state of hopelessness. And so he's kind of going around the palace, kind of looking like the cupbearer, looking like the baker, right, who had those dreams. They were distressed. Maybe the same idea here in Pharaoh. Well, the cupbearer has seen that look before in him. And he remembers, oh, yeah, I remember this Hebrew youth who I was in prison with, Joseph. And so also, what happened maybe the last time that Pharaoh got upset and anxious and distressed? It did not go well for him, right, in his job. He ended up in prison, so he's trying to do whatever he can to make Pharaoh happy again. And he remembers, of course, recalls Joseph and said, Joseph, there's a guy there, I had a dream, and then the baker also had a dream, and he interpreted our dreams, and they came to fulfillment exactly as he said. So, verses 14 to 16, Pharaoh says, okay, let's call this guy from prison, which again, kind of stresses the point how he is willing to do anything, right, to get these dreams interpreted for him. He's willing to call a prisoner up. If he can help me, that'd be great. So Joseph gets retrieved quickly from prison. And can you imagine Joseph? he's been in prison. 2 years have passed since he interpreted the dream of the cupbearer. And then just out of the blue, you hear, hey, Joseph, Pharaoh needs to talk to you. He's like, what? You know, are you serious? I get to talk to Pharaoh? And so he gets dressed for the occasion, gets presentable, and Pharaoh tells Joseph why is needed. I heard that you are able to interpret dreams. And notice what he says there in verse 16, I believe it is. It says, Joseph then answered Pharaoh, saying, it is not in me. God will give Pharaoh a favorable answer. Now, what does he mean by favorable answer? Does he know that this is going to be really good news for you? Is that what he means? No, he's going to give you a truthful answer. Answer that you can, that this is going to happen. That's what it means by favorable. I'm reading from the New American Standard. You may have a different word there. But he gives him a favorable answer. Basically, Joseph, right off the bat, says, it's not me. He points him directly to God, which is a strong move. So verse 17 to 24, Pharaoh is basically recounting the dreams that we already read about. But he does so with a little bit of commentary this time. So notice he says about the cows. They were seven really good, and then there's seven ugly ones. And then he says, I have never seen such bad-looking cows as these in all the land of Egypt. And then he adds to the dream about the grain. There was this strong east wind, a scorching wind that just kind of dried up these grains. And he says, no one was able to tell the meaning of these dreams. No one was able to do it. And so, verses 25 to 32, as we kind of continue this story together, Joseph interprets the dreams to Pharaoh. And again, he gives credit to the Lord. And he says, basically, these two dreams have the same meaning. They're basically two dreams, but they have the same point behind them. The seven good cows and the seven grains, good grains, mean there will be 7 years of plenty. God's going to bless this land abundantly in the next 7 years. But then you saw those ugly cows and the bad grain. They will be, those 7 years will be followed by the 7 years of famine, of drought. Notice in the beginning of this, Joseph begins the explanation and he ends the explanation by giving credit to the Lord. So in this short conversation, Joseph is called out of prison, comes to Pharaoh, and Pharaoh says, I've heard you can interpret dreams. And he says, it's not me, it's the Lord. And then twice, right before he gives the explanation, he gives, this is what the Lord has said. And then again, emphasizing it a third time, this is what God has said. It's not me, it's God. How tempting would it be for Joseph, who does not want to be in prison anymore, saying, I've really got a talent. You think these guys are smart. Let me prove to you how smart I am. He does not do that. He gives credit right to the Lord. And Joseph gives his advice about the dreams. In verses 33 to 36, you should look for a wise man to handle this for you. Why so? Well, that way you don't have to worry about this, because there's a lot already on your plate, right? So select a wise man from among you who's going to be able to handle this and do well with this situation. You should also store up 1/5 of the grain during the 7 years to prepare for the 7 years of famine. Maybe this is true, that Joseph is kind of learning from his experience as a manager of managing Potiphar's house. He's probably come up with situations, and obviously not exactly like this, but some things that he'd have to figure out. So he maybe uses that background, and God is using Joseph to bless the land of Egypt immensely. And so after this conversation, Pharaoh goes to his officials, to his wise men, and basically he says, is there anyone as wise as Joseph to hand this job to? So everyone agrees with that, which is pretty amazing. Everyone is on board with a Hebrew coming in and being basically second in command. But they say, we couldn't figure it out. He certainly has the Spirit of God in him. So who is going to do better than Joseph? So Pharaoh says, you are the man I want for the job. And notice what Pharaoh says exactly. He says, because God has enabled you. So because of Joseph's emphasis on this is what the Lord has done, this is the Lord's God talking to me, this is what it means. Well, since your God enabled you to do this, he gives credit to the Lord. And it's amazing how that works. And the same can work for us. If we're constantly giving God the credit in our life, it will then emphasize to others, well, since your God did this or whatever, it emphasizes, encourages others to do the very same thing. So Joseph is once again the second greatest in the house, but now the house is much bigger, from Potiphar's house to second in command of all of Egypt. So in verses 41 to 45, we'd say Joseph gets a promotion, right? From the prison, from the pits to second in command. He says, I place you in authority over all the land of Egypt. Pharaoh gives Joseph his signet ring, which is basically, I'm giving you authority to do whatever you want. I don't know how wise Pharaoh is, but he's very trusting in this Joseph Hebrew that came from prison. And Joseph gets dressed up in all the nice clothes, step up from his prison clothes. Joseph rides around in the chariot. Everyone sees him as the second in command, bow down, kneels before him. And he says, he ends with this, "I'm Pharaoh, but without your permission, no one is allowed to do anything in all the land of Egypt." So what power that Pharaoh has given him, or could we say what authority God, right, is giving authority to him. And if you think about the timing, I know we've mentioned this in the past, but you think about the timing, God has the best timing out of anybody. Joseph's timing would have been, "I want to be released 2 years earlier." No, Pharaoh needs to have these dreams so you can be promoted. It's always best to wait on God. So Joseph then, verse 45, is given a wife by Pharaoh, the daughter of the priest of On. Understand, that's kind of the priest of the sun god. So he gives him a wife. Then in verse 46 to 49, we see Joseph kind of beginning his job, begins with the 7 years of plenty. And he is collecting the grain, the fifth, 20%, we would say, of grain. And he says, to a point, it's impossible to count it all. Now, think about that. If it's impossible to count 20% of it, think about how abundantly God is blessing all the land of Egypt. Notice also, it says he was able to put grain bins in every city. What's significant about that? Well, back in Missouri, we had a lot of farmers go to the church there in Joplin. And I remember a conversation with one of them, and he says, "Man, I got really lucky." I'm kind of putting words in his mouth. But basically, "I was extremely blessed with this plot of land over here." Now, his other plots of land were just like right across the street. But he said, this plot of land did significantly better than the others. Now, what do we see here? Every plot of land, every city in Egypt did well. So you just see God being exactly true to what he said. And then in verse 50 through 52, we see God blessing Joseph with two boys. And notice the names. And I'm going to kind of have you do the commentary on this and what exactly it means. So he names the first one, of course, Manasseh. And basically Manasseh means God has made me forget. Okay, so God has made me forget. And then it's adding my troubles that he's had for, we can all honestly say, the past 13 years. Right, he was 17 when he was a slave, now he's 30. And he has made me forget all my father's house. Now this is where it gets a little bit tricky, and some people go different directions on this. What is Joseph saying by that? Is he saying, I'm kind of writing my family off. I'm going to forget my father's house. Or is he saying, I'm going to, all of these blessings that God has blessed me with, it has kind of lightened the burden, and I'm not going to dwell on and think about all the burdens that happened at my father's house. It's a little bit different, but I think how you interpret that, it is significant on how you understand the rest of the story. So when Joseph's brothers come into town, and he sends them in prison, right? And do you see that as, is he trying to find out, can I trust you? Or I'm kind of getting back at you at what you did to me. So I'll let you think about that and come up with your own. My personal thought on that, if you want it, if you don't want it, here it is anyways, is I think it's the second, it's the latter. Where I am forgetting all of the pain that I had to go through. And I see the rest of this story, when his brothers come into town, is he's trying to figure out, can I trust you? And you will see that a lot, in my opinion. You'll see that a lot, especially with Benjamin, how they treat Benjamin. Because Benjamin is now the Joseph, right? So we'll look at that. Lord willing, at another time. But I'll leave that up to you, because people go different ways in that. And the second one, Manasseh, that's Manasseh, God has made me forget, Ephraim, mean God has made me fruitful in the land of my suffering. So I don't think there's really too much argument on what that one can lend towards. So God, but notice both names, and it's interesting, who did most of the name calling with Jacob's children? Was it Jacob or his wives? It was his wives up until, I think, Benjamin was the first one he got to name. But here we have Joseph kind of naming his kid. God has made me do this. God has blessed me. We're going to make a point with that because I think that's significant. Of course, they would name people on the meaning of the name. We just kind of like the sound of a name. I think I'll name my kid this. And sometimes the wife agrees, and sometimes I'll name our kids. So 7 years later, we have the years of plenty come to an end and the famine begins, just as Joseph predicted, or maybe betterly said, is just as God had predicted. So the people cry to Pharaoh, who basically said, okay, this is not my territory. I'll send you to Joseph. Just do whatever he tells you to do. And we also learn in these verses that the famine was more widespread than just Egypt. It affected, it was all in all the other lands as well. So the famine gets worse, and Joseph starts doing business. And we'll see later on that Egypt becomes this very powerful nation because of what God is doing. That's our story, right? I think most of us already knew that story pretty well. But I want to look at three applications that are very powerful, and I think some that we can really think about, and I would encourage you to do more thinking than just what we're able to cover tonight. The first one is, I think this shows the importance of saving. What if during those 7 years of plenty, they just consumed everything that God blessed them with? If they were to do that, and then the 7 years of famine came, they would be in the same ship, same predicament as the rest of the world. So notice, why did they save? And maybe that sounds like a pretty simple question. Why did they save? Well, because God told them to, right? Because that was the interpretation of the dreams. Again, I think this really shows how faithful Joseph is. Again, if you were to put yourself in Joseph's position, and I don't know this, maybe this is true, you can help me here, but maybe it was when Joseph was 17 years old. When he was 17, he had those dreams. Maybe it was before that, but around 17, I think we could safely say. He had those dreams that his brothers are going to bow down to him. And then that his father and mother would also bow down to him. Now, he was kind of happy about those dreams, and he shared those with his brothers. And then what proceeded to happen after that? Anything but we're going to bow down to you, right? It was the exact opposite. We're going to sell you to Egypt. And then in Egypt, you're going to be thrown in prison. It's not anything that you've done. That's just how it goes. And so we have spent 13 years, right? He was 30 when he came into, when he got out of prison. Now, if we were to add 7, right? So he's 37. Can we just say 20 years? That's safe, if our math is right on that. God has not answered that dream. He has not fulfilled those dreams. That was very obvious and very easy to say this is what those dreams mean. Think about the cupbearer, and think about the baker. How quickly did God fulfill their dreams? Does anyone remember? I can open it up. How quickly did God fulfill their dreams? 3 days. Right. In 3 days, This is what's going to happen. You're going to be restored. You're going to be dead. Think about Pharaoh. How quickly did God fulfill his dreams? Maybe immediately, we could say. I guess it determines on if you're going to count those 7 years of plenty, which I think we should. That's a fulfillment, right, of those dreams. And yet here's Joseph still waiting for those dreams. So again, let me ask the question, why did Joseph act? Why did he save during these 7 years? Because he still trusted God. He still said God is faithful to his word. Certainly not on my timetable. I'm still waiting for him to fulfill the dreams that I had 20 years ago. But one thing is consistent with Joseph. We can trust God. Whether he gives dreams to the cupbearer, the baker, to Pharaoh, one thing is a constant. Whatever God says will come true. I think that's really powerful. That's easy to do when everything's going well. When you have a phenomenal dream that you can't wait to come true, these evil brothers that can't say anything nice to me, they're going to bow down to me. When is that going to happen? Well, it's going to happen. And I believe the thing that kept Joseph faithful through all of this is he believed in God. I think that's a great testament to Joseph. So they saved. And I don't think this is the main point of this chapter, but I do think we can learn the example here, and it's wise to save. Proverbs chapter 6, a text we're familiar with. Go to the ant, right, you sluggard. And what does the ant do? Well, there's a lot of things in that section that it kind of tells the example of an ant and what he does. If you watch him, instead of just stomping him on the ground, that's kind of usually what I do. But if you watch him, he's going to store up food when it's good for the winter. So there's an example. Maybe this is more to the point. Proverbs 21 in verse 20 says, there is precious treasure and oil in the dwelling of the... What would you think that next word would be? There's great treasures and oil in the dwelling of the... What would you put in there? What would you put? Or I thought you were raising your hand. Sorry. What word would you put in there? In the dwelling of the... I don't know. I would say rich. That would be my answer. What Solomon says is in the dwelling of the wise. See the difference? Anyone can save. It takes a wise person to save. But then he goes on, Proverbs 21, verse 20, but a foolish man swallows it all up. A foolish man just, whatever he gets, he consumes. He doesn't save anything. The temptation is certainly there for us as well to spend everything we make. And I was listening to someone who said, we live in the most marketed place and time in the history of the world. And I mean, I think we would all agree that's probably true, right? If you get out your phone, you're playing a game, what shows up? An ad. You're on the computer, what shows up? An ad. You're on TV, ads everywhere. I mean, everywhere you look, it's advertisements trying to get us to get what they are trying to sell. And I would assume that most of us do not struggle with desiring something to have. It's like, if you could have anything you want, what would you get? I think, oh man, that'd be fun. You know, we think about all these things that we could buy or get. I wish I had. Improvements are constantly being made to the things that we do have, right? The iPhone 12, I think, is now out. And we do that with phones, computers, cars, that silly channel, HGTV, doesn't do anything to help us be content, right, with what they have, with what we currently have. And the temptation is always there to spend and spend. It is not very exciting in the short term to save, but it is essential in the long run. It takes a self-control not to spend all the fun items, right, on temporary happiness. But if we do not put aside and save, like they did, a famine is going to come. I think our grandmas would say, save some aside for a rainy day, right? The rainy day is going to come. That's just kind of a sub-point, I think, in this, that we would do well to think about. And also, what we learn from Joseph is make sure we are influencing those around us. Joseph is not ashamed of God, and he puts a lot of trust in God. It is one thing to give credit to God to a prisoner, right? When the prisoner says, I've had a dream, and well, Joseph said, well, look, I'm nothing special. Interpretations belong to God. I think it's another thing when Pharaoh, the king of Egypt, says, I heard you can interpret dreams. It's, I think, sometimes harder to give credit to the Lord in that circumstance when you know Pharaoh can do something for me. He has the power to do something, but every time he is giving glory and credit to the Lord. Think about Pharaoh's religion, when Joseph says, don't interpretations belong to God? Did Pharaoh serve the God that Joseph served? So what is Joseph saying? I have a God that I serve who is able to give its interpretations. So he points him to the one true God. We need to be like Joseph and never be afraid to tell anyone about God. Remember Jesus telling his apostles, you are going to go before governors and kings for my sake? Well, we see that. Remember the story of Meshach, Shadrach, and Abednego, where he says to Nebuchadnezzar, like, God can do whatever he wants to. God is able to save us. But whether he does that, we don't know. But he's able. He points Nebuchadnezzar to God. Many times, I think Satan uses fear to keep us silent. When we say, when we know maybe we should bring up God or give credit to the Lord, we don't want to make the situation uncomfortable. And so we kind of leave God out of the conversation. And I think Satan does that with fear. The best conversation we can have with others is telling them about God. And the only way we are going to tell others about God is if we're excited about it, if we have a relationship with God. Let me give you these three examples. If you are really, really excited about something, it can be anything. You're really excited about sports or whatever, right? It'd be sports probably for me. So I'm really excited about that Arkansas almost won. And that is super exciting that we almost did it. Well, how hard is that for me to bring up in conversation? If I'm really excited, I'm going to find a way to bring that into the conversation. Can't we apply that to God? If we're excited about what God has done for us and the blessings we have in God, what is going to keep us from saying that? What if something really benefited you in some way and said, man, you have to do this. It will benefit your life. It will give you all these blessings in life. You need to be a part of this. They would be quick to do that. Again, think about what God has done for us. Or we really enjoyed a good book. This is the best book I've ever written or I've ever read. And you need to read it. I think it'd be really good for you to think about and read and dwell on. It's really helped me. Can't we do the same, right, with the Bible? We all have influence. And our influence is at different levels with different people. What was Joseph's influence with Pharaoh? Like zero, right? Pharaoh didn't even know Joseph. Now, he had a good recommendation from the cupbearer. Well, what did Joseph do with just that first conversation he had with Pharaoh? I'm going to point you to God, because God is able to do it, nothing in me. Give God the glory for everything we do. Influence those around us. And as we mentioned before, we can learn from Joseph just how important it is to put our trust in God. You think about when Joseph was promoted to second in command. What happened to Joseph? Well, he'd given great clothes. He was even given an Egyptian wife. It doesn't seem as though Joseph had any say in that. Just Pharaoh said, you get to marry her. And Joseph, okay. So basically, he is being Egyptianized. Now, I don't know if that's a word or not, but I think you know what I mean by that. He has now adopted the kind of the culture, the way they dress, and now even an Egyptian wife. Joseph is now the second most powerful man in Egypt, which is about to become one of the strongest, powerful, most powerful nations in the world. I think there would be a very strong temptation for anyone to just try and fit in. Right, you look Egyptian, you married an Egyptian, everything is Egyptian. Why don't you just accept how we worship, how we do things, and there won't be any conflict? It doesn't seem that Joseph's wife was a believer. I don't know how she could be. That's just me thinking. That kind of dangerous sometimes, me thinking. But I don't know how she would have become a worshiper of the true God. The daughter was a priest to the sun god. Now, can you think of anyone else in the Bible who was influenced by his wife's, put it in the plural, away from God? Wasn't it the wisest person, right? Solomon. He was led astray, not because of the influence of his wives. That's where I go back to Joseph being the one to name his sons. Manasseh, God has made me forget my trouble. Ephraim, God has blessed me in the land of my troubles. Joseph stayed faithful to God. Sometimes it's harder, and you can think about this. It's harder to stay faithful to God when you're extremely blessed than it is when you're going through a tough time. And I say that for this logic. When we're going through a tough time and we know there's no way I can get myself out of this or anyone else can get myself out of this, who do people normally turn to? Well, I've tried everything else. Now I got to pray to God, see if he can do something about it. And they use God as a safety net. And I don't think Joseph did that. I'm not painting a light on Joseph and say, well, God is the God of my safety net because things aren't going well. I think when people do well and they get influence and they get power and they get wealth, some can understand and feel like, I've got this under control. I don't need God anymore. You do not see that with Joseph. He stays faithful to God. Not many people can stay faithful to God in times of plenty and in times of want. But we see that, certainly we see that in Joseph. I want to end with this, what Jesus said, what Jesus started with on the Sermon on the Mount. Blessed are the poor in spirit. In Genesis, at the end of Genesis 41, would you consider Joseph poor or rich? Would you consider him poor in spirit? Joseph always constantly said, God is number one, and I'm going to give God the credit and the glory for everything that is happening. And sometimes it's hard when God chooses to bless us to say, I still need to be poor in spirit. I need to have the heart that understands that I need God now just as much as any other time in my life. And that can be a challenge. I appreciate so much your good attention. And this will kind of wrap up our story on Genesis 41. And I look forward. We're going to go, Lord willing, kind of at a more quick pace with Joseph and his brothers and kind of see that from a bird's eye view and kind of see what's going on with all that in future lessons. So I look forward to doing that with you. I know a lot of us are going to be traveling this week or sometime soon. I think Barry and Teresa have already set out, so we can be praying for them and praying for a lot of us who will be traveling as well. There's anyone here who needs to respond to the gospel, needs to make their life right with the Lord. We don't want any opportunity, any day to go by without at least giving you that opportunity. And we have some great prayer warriors here who are ready and anxious to pray and help you in any way that we can. If you want to come forward now as we stand and sing.